All right. Good morning. We are in the close to the end of our leadership series. Today, the title is God's Kind of Leader Gets the Facts Before Making Judgments. Have you ever made a fool of yourself by misjudging a situation and overreacting to something you completely misunderstood? I've got a yes. I'm just gonna bring you into the topic with a little clip from I Love Lucy. This is from the 50s. How many of you have never seen I Love Lucy? Okay, everybody's seen it. Good. Maybe you've seen this one. Okay.
See a talking seal.
Talking seal? Does he do an act?
No, the seal is the manager. He's got a couple of trained people.
You're daffy.
Hey, listen, I want to give you the dope on the dogs, and you have to get it to the publicity department this morning. They'll never get it out on time.
Okay, Jerry, wait a minute, will you?
All right.
Wait a minute. Give me the name.
Oh, here's the dog's name.
And?
Mary.
Helen.
Cynthia.
Alice.
And Theodore.
Theodore.
Yeah.
These are dogs?
Well, that's the way they want to be billed. Oh, and listen while I think of it. You know, your budget can't afford all those dogs and a girl singer. Now, what are you going to do about Marilyn?
Oh, I didn't tell you, huh? Well, I've been wondering what to do about it for a long time. I finally made up my mind. I'm going to get rid of her. Yeah, she's been with me a long time, Jerry, and that's the trouble. She's been with me too long. After all, the same face, night after night. It's pretty tiresome. I'll probably miss her some, but in a couple of weeks, I'll get another one, and she'll be just as good. Maybe even better.
Yeah, well, I guess you're right. A girl singer isn't the most important thing in the world. Oh, before I forget, did you pick up that trick gadget for the Western number?
The gun? Yeah, I got it right here in my desk drawer.
Well, that's a good deal. Okay, then I'll see you later, Dad.
Goodbye, dear. Oh, hiya, honey.
Hi.
Listen, I have to rush right down to the club, so I'll get breakfast down there.
Bye.
Goodbye. Oh. I'll be back in a couple of hours.
Bye.
Uh-oh. I forgot.
For the rest of the show, she's paranoid that he's going to kill her, and that's the assumption that she functions out of. Brian, can you get this back on for me? Thank you. Everything that happens, she interprets from this belief that my husband wants to kill me. She's been reading a murder mystery, and so that's gotten into her mind. But in a sitcom like I Love Lucy, that's funny. It's goofy. It's funny. But in real life, we do that too. And in real life, it can be fatal. It can really, really mess up a lot of things. Wars have been ignited over misunderstandings. I found an article from history.com, 6 wars fought for ridiculous reasons. And I learned about the War of the Stray Dog. In one of the most bizarre conflicts of the 20th century, a dog inadvertently triggered an international crisis. The incident was the culmination of a long period of hostility between Greece and Bulgaria, which had been at odds since the Second Balkan War in the 1910s. Tension finally boiled over in October 1925 when a Greek soldier was shot after allegedly crossing the border into Bulgaria while chasing after his runaway dog. The shooting became a rallying cry for the Greeks, who soon after invaded Bulgaria and occupied several villages. They were even set to commence shelling the city of Petrik when the League of Nations finally intervened and condemned the attack. An international committee later negotiated a ceasefire between the two nations, but not before the misunderstanding had resulted in the deaths of some 50 people. God's kind of leader gets the facts before making judgments. How easy is it to come to conclusions without all the information? We are constantly filling in gaps. We make assumptions. We make judgments based on our perspective, which is always incomplete. Always. You call somebody on the phone, they don't pick up. You're pretty sure they're available, so you start to think they're avoiding you. Right? Or somebody shows up late to something that's important to you. You get irritated. Why can't they get their priorities straight? Don't they understand how important this is? You don't have all the information. You don't know why they were late. So I'd just like for us to admit right now that in practically every situation, we don't start out with all the facts. Can we admit that? Can you nod your head if that's the truth? We don't start out with all the facts. But we think we do. We think we know enough to make a judgment when we do that. Joshua chapter 22, the people of Israel are on the brink of civil war because of a misunderstanding. Somebody seriously misinterpreted the facts of a situation. So I want to show you what happened. Hopefully we can learn from some of their mistakes. There are some good things they have going on too. But after we look at that, then I want to share with you a process that can keep you from making a fool of yourself when you're tempted to make a quick judgment of a situation you don't understand as well as you think you do. That's where we're headed today. So if you have a Bible, Joshua chapter 21 is where we're going to, Joshua 21 is where we're going to start. Mostly we'll be in chapter 22. So if you have a Bible, open it up. Joshua chapter 21. We're going to read the last few verses of the chapter. Verse 43, so the Lord gave Israel all the land he had sworn to give their forefathers, and they took possession of it and settled there. The Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their forefathers. Not one of their enemies withstood them. The Lord handed all their enemies over to them. Not one of all the Lord's good promises to the house of Israel failed. Every one was fulfilled. So we're at a transition point. If you've been with us in Joshua, they've been doing this battle in military. They've been taking over the country of Israel. It's theirs now. Now we're in a transition. The conquest is over. The season of rest begins. So Israel's in this new era now. There's a transition right here. Now they get to enjoy the land. This is good. Now, not everybody is out of the land who's supposed to be, but basically the fighting is over pretty much, and everybody is glad for that. So now, what happens in chapter 22, Joshua talks to the 2.5 tribes who live on the other side of the Jordan, who came across and been fighting with their brothers for land that they wouldn't even possess. Joshua speaks to them because they have given up a lot, and he has nothing but good things to say to these 2.5 tribes. Chapter 22, the first 9 verses. Then Joshua summoned the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. He said to them, you have done all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded, and you've obeyed me in everything I commanded. For a long time now, to this very day, you have not deserted your brothers, but have carried out the mission the Lord your God gave you. Now that the Lord your God has given your brothers rest, as he promised, return to your homes in the land that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you on the other side of the Jordan. But be very careful to keep the commandment and the law that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to obey his commands, to hold fast to him, and to serve him with all your heart and all your soul. Then Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went to their homes. To the half-tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given land in Bashan, and to the other half of the tribe of Joshua gave land on the west side of the Jordan with their brothers. When Joshua sent them home, he blessed them, saying, return to your homes with your great wealth, with large herds of livestock, with silver, gold, bronze, and iron, and a great quantity of clothing, and divide with your brothers the plunder from your enemies. So the Reubenites, the Gadites, the half-tribe of Manasseh left the Israelites at Shiloh in Canaan to return to Gilead, their own land, which they had acquired in accordance with the command of the Lord through Moses. So these two and a half tribes, the men had crossed the river and fought with their brothers. They didn't come out of it with nothing. You know, Joshua says, go home with lots of wealth. They had gotten a lot of loot that they got to bring home. So they go home wealthy with all this gold, silver, iron, and all this stuff. And he says, you need to share it with your brothers. Not everybody had come across. Some people had to keep the land going. So there were some people back home. He said, share it with everybody. But he's just encouraging them. He's applauding them. He's blessing them for their sacrifice. Because we have to remember the sacrifice that these two and a half tribes had made. They had been away from their families for 7 years. Away from their families for 7 years. Process that for a second. That's a lot of childhood to miss if you have kids. An 11-year-old girl is 18 now. A baby boy is now 7. And you missed all of that. That's a huge sacrifice. You can't make that up. They had given that willingly. Joshua applauds them for their loyalty, their obedience to God. Joshua praises them. God blesses them. They head home. They're so ready to see their families again. The battle is over finally. So you got to picture their mindset. They finally get to see their families. This is kind of like a happily ever after kind of situation. Everybody's happy. Everybody's excited. They're heading home. And just when you think everything's as it should be, more trouble is stirring. The next thing we know, there's this huge misunderstanding that almost puts the nation of Israel at war with themselves. That's what happens next. Chapter 22, verse 10. When they came to Gilaloth, near the Jordan in the land of Canaan, the Reubenites, the Gadites, the half-tribe of Manasseh, built an imposing altar there by the Jordan. And when the Israelites heard that they had built the altar on the border of Canaan at Gilaloth near the Jordan on the Israelite side, the whole assembly of Israel gathered at Shiloh to go to war against them. They built an altar. The Israelites said, what? And they're ready to go to war. So the Israelites sent Phinehas, son of Eleazar the priest, to the land of Gilead, to Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. With him they sent 10 of the chief men, one for each of the tribes of Israel, each the head of a family division among the Israelite clans. When they went to Gilead, to Reuben, Gad, the half-tribe of Manasseh, they said to them, verse 16, the whole assembly of the Lord says, how could you break faith with the God of Israel like this? How could you turn away from the Lord and build yourselves an altar in rebellion against him until now? Was not the sin of Peor enough for us? Up to this very day, we have not cleansed ourselves from that sin, even though a plague fell on the community of the Lord. And are you now turning away from the Lord? If you rebel against the Lord today, tomorrow he will be angry with the whole community of Israel. If the land you possess is defiled, come over to the Lord's side where the Lord's tabernacle stands and share the land with us. But do not rebel against the Lord or against us by building an altar for yourselves, other than the altar of the Lord our God. When Achan, son of Zerah, acted unfaithfully regarding the devoted things, did not wrath come upon the whole community of Israel? He was not the only one who died for his sin. Then Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh replied to the heads of the clans of Israel. The Mighty One, God the Lord, the Mighty One, God the Lord, he knows. And let Israel know, if this had been in rebellion or disobedience to the Lord, do not spare us this day. If we have built our own altar to turn away from the Lord and offer burnt offerings and grain offerings or to sacrifice fellowship offerings on it, may the Lord himself call us to account. No, we did it for fear that someday your descendants might say to ours, what do you have to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? The Lord has made the Jordan a boundary between us and you, you Reubenites and Gadites. You have no share in the Lord, so your descendants might cause ours to stop fearing the Lord. That's why we said, let us get ready and build an altar. but not for burnt offerings or sacrifices. On the contrary, it's to be a witness between us, to you and the generations that follow, that we will worship the Lord at his sanctuary with our burnt offerings, sacrifices, and fellowship offerings. Then, in the future, your descendants will not be able to say to ours, you have no share in the Lord. And we said, if they ever say this to us or to our descendants, we will answer, look at the replica of the Lord's altar, which our forefathers built, not for burnt offerings and sacrifices, but as a witness between us and you. Far be it from us to rebel against the Lord and turn away from him today by building an altar for burnt offerings, grain offerings, sacrifices, other than the altar of the Lord our God that stands before his tabernacle. When Phinehas the priest and the leaders of the community, the heads of the clans of the Israelites, heard what Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh had to say, they were pleased. Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the priest, said to Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, today we know that the Lord is with us, because you have not acted unfaithfully toward the Lord in this matter. Now you have rescued the Israelites from the Lord's hand. Then Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the priest, and the leaders returned to Canaan from their meeting with the Reubenites and Gadites in Gilead and reported to the Israelites. They were glad to hear the report and praised God, and they talked no more about going to war against them to devastate the country where the Reubenites and the Gadites lived. And the Reubenites and the Gadites gave the altar this name, a witness between us that the Lord is God. So did you follow what happened in that scenario? Did you follow what was going on? The 2.5 tribes are headed home, right? They get to the Jordan River. And I just picture all the memories just flooding back. 7 years ago, they crossed this river on dry land. God parted the waters. They walked across. Since then, they'd have victory after victory after victory. They'd overcome their enemy. Everything was done. Now, their hearts are full. God is good. They get to go home. Joshua just finished challenging, remain faithful to God. Follow his commands. Love him more and more. They're all about that. Their hearts are filled with worship. So right there at the Jordan, they decide, we're going to build an altar. And it says they build an imposing altar. This is a big altar. This is a memorial, just like they built at Gilgal, so they can remember, so everybody else will remember, future generations, that they worship the living God. They're not planning to offer sacrifices. It's a memorial. They understood that the big problem here, the big misunderstanding, is based on one of God's laws in Leviticus that Moses had said, through God had said through Moses, you only offer sacrifices one place, in the presence of God, at the tabernacle. So there it is, Leviticus 17. Any Israelite who sacrifices an ox, a lamb, or a goat in the camp or outside of it, instead of bringing it to the entrance to the tent of meeting to present it as an offering to the Lord in front of the tabernacle of the Lord, that person should be considered guilty of bloodshed. They have shed blood and must be cut off from their people. This is so the Israelites will bring the Lord's sacrifices they are now making in the open fields. They must bring them to the priest, that is to the Lord, at the entrance to the tent of meeting and sacrifice them as fellowship offerings. So all of Israel understood there's one place you offer sacrifices, at the tabernacle where God has said, this is where I am, this is where you bring sacrifices. Everybody, you had to travel. You had to travel. If you want to offer a sacrifice, you got to go to Shiloh at the time. So the other 9.5 tribes, they find out that there's this altar here. It's not at the tabernacle. And they bust a seam. They don't know what in the world are you guys doing? They don't really know all the details of why they did it. But they see this altar and immediately they see idolatry. You are offering sacrifices where you're not supposed to. This is treason. This is a problem. We're going to address it. I can't believe it. Already our brothers are turning to false gods. They're not going to stand for that. So there's a holy zeal that fires them up, that sends them after their brothers to chase them down for this wickedness. But there's a problem. They don't have all the facts, right? They don't know the motives. They don't know why they did this. And as I look at their interaction, when they charge down there and they go to the leaders of Gad and Manasseh and those guys, what did they say to them? Did it sound like they're looking for understanding? It's verses 15 to 20, I think it was. Verse 16 is where they start. They ask questions, right? How could you break faith with the God of Israel like this? How could you turn away from the Lord and build yourselves an altar in rebellion against him until now? Is there a problem with that line of questioning? Are they trying to understand? They've decided. They know what happened. Somehow you guys have rebelled. They judge their hearts, right? I know what happened. I'm confronting you about this right now. They're not trying to understand. You know exactly what happened. They won't stand for it. They're actually ready to go to war. And they've had no interaction. They've asked no questions. No discussion. How often do we make the same mistake? How often do we judge somebody else's motives and decide we know what they have done was wrong and we know their motives? And how often do we do that? It's pretty natural. It was interesting. I was talking to Matt on the phone, and on Thursday, Matt was on the receiving end of a misjudgment like this with his boss. Something happened on Monday that his boss was upset with him and didn't say anything until Thursday, and he's rolling around in his mind, finally comes out on Thursday, and Matt gets this, come into my office, you're in trouble kind of deal. Like, I'm sure his stomach flipped like mine would, but when he finally heard what the deal was, Matt was able to clarify, no, this is a misunderstanding. You got the details wrong. And he was able to clear the air, thankfully, and Matt's not in trouble. The boss is okay. Everything's okay now. But unfortunately, a lot of times that conversation never happens. That's what we want to avoid. That conversation needs to happen. Why doesn't it happen? Why don't we have that conversation sometimes? You do something that offends me, I'm mad, and I don't talk to you about it. Why not? Part of it is because I know what you did, and I know you were wrong, and I know enough to be angry with you. Isn't that true? But if we can humble ourselves to the point to say, I don't have all the facts. I don't have some of the background information. Sometimes it'll completely turn things around. Proverbs 18:13 says, he who answers before listening, that is his folly and his shame. He who answers before listening, that is his folly and his shame. If you're convinced you know something and you go after them and you talk to them before giving them a chance to defend themselves and give an answer, you are determining that you are a fool. We don't want to be there. We don't want to do that. Now, I'm kind of railing on these 9.5 tribes. They should not have approached this the way they did. But there's a positive side to this. I mentioned the holy zeal. Why is Israel so upset about this? It's because worship really matters. Worship really matters. And what they see is these people have turned away from God. So that is a big deal, if it was true. These people are absolutely committed to God. He's the one worthy of worship. And they're willing to die over that. They're willing to die over that. So this is good. The reason they're so worked up about this is a good reason. This really does matter a lot. You also maybe notice they have a healthy fear of God driving this. There's a little bit of, if you do this, we might get in trouble. Now, if you notice that in verse 18 and 22, verse 18, they said, if you rebel against the Lord today, tomorrow he'll be angry with the whole community of Israel. God might be going after us because what you're doing. Verse 20, they bring up Achan. We looked at him in chapter 7. When Achan, son of Zerah, acted unfaithfully regarding the devoted things he stole from God, did not wrath come upon the whole community of Israel? He wasn't the only one who died for his sin. There's a problem. This is going to affect us too. So worship matters a lot to Israel. That's a good thing. The worship of Yahweh was the single unifying factor for Israel. That's what brought the 12 tribes together. It was worship. It was Yahweh, that he's their God. All that God had done for them, bringing them into the land, Yahweh was the one who united them. He held them together. So when they see somebody drifting away from Yahweh, that's separating the family, the community. So this really, really mattered a lot. And if their judgment had been accurate, maybe it would have been worth going to war over. Maybe it would have. We don't live in that time, so things are different. But aren't there some parallels here? Aren't there some similarities? Isn't it our common faith that brings us together? We are so different. I mean, you look around and think about the people who aren't here today too, and the different families, the different backgrounds. Like, it's Christ who brings us together. That's our unifying factor. So when somebody drifts away from God, what usually happens, they drift away from other believers too. That happens. But worship is really important to us too. We should have some holy zeal about that. If I see somebody who appears to be drifting away from God, I should be concerned about that. This isn't just about the unity of the family. It's also about truth. It's also about eternity. And the God of creation is the God of redemption. And he's told us that pretty clearly, if you choose to worship another God, you choose damnation. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. So we should have some holy zeal about if somebody seems to be not worshiping the true God. So the issue matters a lot. Worship matters a lot. But I can think of a better way they could have handled that situation. How much easier would this have been clarified with just some honest questions, withholding judgment until they found out why they had built this altar? And gather some more information. There's definitely a lesson to be learned from this. Thankfully, it ended well. I mean, this could have erupted. They just charged in after these 2.5 tribes. Usually when somebody goes after somebody else, what does that do? Defensiveness? You're ready to fight. Thankfully, that didn't happen. They got to reply. They got to respond. You guys have this all wrong. This is not what we're doing. We haven't offered any sacrifices on this altar. We did it so that we can worship ongoing through generation to generation. We're afraid that you guys might forget that we get to come across the Jordan and worship at Shiloh with you guys. You might forget that someday. If they'd been following God's instructions all the way along, they'd be coming over 3 times a year to do that. There were 3 times a year that you were supposed to do that. So that would help them remember too. So did they have to build that altar? Not necessarily, but it wasn't because of wrong motives and they weren't doing what they were condemned for doing. So they clarify, they talk about what's going on, and this is a memorial. We are worshiping the one true God. And so when the brothers finally heard that, their war cry turns into a celebration. Everybody's happy. Like, oh, okay. And everybody's happy. And the problem is over. So there's a happy ending in Joshua 22. But in our lives, there's not always a happy ending, is there? When we have a misunderstanding, when somebody hurts us, when we get offended. People make judgments all the time without bothering to clarify what really happened or what the person really meant. And Matt could have lost his job over that. Because forget it, we're not having a conversation. I don't know what the issue was, but he could have just said, you know what, you're done. Get out. Marriages break up over stuff like that. Kids stomp out and never speak to their parents again. Sometimes it's just a stupid misunderstanding. It could have been fixed really easily with a conversation. Families, marriages, and churches have been ripped apart because somebody misjudged the motives of another person. Came to a conclusion without the facts, refused to reconcile. This is dangerous stuff we're talking about. And the person erring is the one who was hurt in this situation. Now, there are definitely times when someone does hurt you and they've done something wrong, and there needs to be a different kind of reconciliation there. Sometimes you've been hurt, you misjudge it, you read it wrong, and you're the one causing the problem because you're not willing to reconcile and clarify and understand. So it's kind of the opposite of what you would think. I would like us to commit ourselves to a better way. When I'm upset about something, our natural way, the natural way we function is we know enough to be upset. I don't need any more information. I know what they did. I can justify my anger. But that is man's wisdom. That's man's wisdom. God's wisdom says something different. We looked at one piece of God's wisdom here. And I want to show you three Proverbs. This is one of them. Three Proverbs just to help cement in your mind and heart that sometimes we make unfair judgments because we misinterpret what's going on. So I want to bring three Proverbs to you. You might want to write these down. You might need these, or maybe you already have them memorized and you function this way all the time. But here's the first one, Proverbs 19:2. It is not good to have zeal without knowledge, nor to be hasty and miss the way. It's not good to have zeal without knowledge, nor to be hasty and miss the way. Israel responded with zeal, lacking some knowledge. You get fired up about something and charge into a situation without the right knowledge, you make a fool of yourself. You miss the way. That's what that verse is about. Proverbs 18:17. Here you go. The first to present his case seems right till another comes forward and questions him. The first to present his case seems right till another comes forward and questions him. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but you hear somebody talk about something and you are riled up, and then you hear the other side of the story. Oh. Make sure you understand both sides if you're going to come to some kind of conclusion or judgment. And the last one, Proverbs 18:13. He who answers before listening, that is his folly and his shame. Listen first. Listen first. So Israel did all of that. They broke all of those. They didn't have the book of Proverbs back then, but they did have God's wisdom. They had zeal without knowledge. They took one side of the situation and didn't hear the other side. They answered before listening. They charged in and realized they were totally wrong. Totally wrong. Those three Proverbs, those are huge in parenting. When you got little kids, think about dealing with little kids, young kids, maybe even teens sometimes. How many times have I been led to the wrong conclusion when one of my kids is telling on another? Dad! Dad! And then they tell this story. It is amazing how skilled they can be at presenting true facts, concealing others, and emphasizing the guilt of the other and hiding their own. Buddy, they're good at that. They're so good at that. Are they doing it on purpose? We do this naturally. You do it as adults too. Maybe it doesn't happen at your house, but it happens at mine. One kid comes running into the room screaming, "She hit me with a stick! She hit me with a stick!" They're crying. I mean, am I going to be upset by that? Somebody hit someone else with a stick? Are you kidding? That's not okay. I don't care what they did to instigate it. You don't hit somebody with a stick, right? So I'm going into that room fired up. You have done wrong. I know this. Then I find out they were sword fighting. And it was the other kid's idea. And they got hit in the finger as they're sword fighting. Now, is that a good idea? No, but that changes things a little bit, doesn't it? I'm not making this up. This happens in my house. There are times when I'm invited into a conflict with two of my kids, and honestly, I have no idea what actually happened. I have no clue. I go back and forth, and they point out their guilt, and they point out their guilt, and I can't tell what happened. And this is just a freebie. Don't ever discipline your kids when you're not sure what happened. Don't discipline somebody because you think probably that one's truthful more often than the other one. You think they're probably the one who did. Don't do that. It's better to miss an opportunity to discipline than to discipline an innocent party. And It happened in my wife's family way back when they were little. Her brother Nathan got spanked for something he didn't do. And the other siblings are just kind of sitting back. Yeah. Don't do that. Don't fall into that. Make sure you follow these proverbs. This isn't just for kids though, right? This isn't just for kids. And the next time you start to get upset with somebody, stop yourself. Withhold your judgment, keeping those proverbs in mind. Remind yourself, you gotta build this reflex into yourself. I don't have all the facts. I don't have all the facts. I don't know all the details. I don't know everything about this. Till you get the whole picture. Let that become a reflex for you. That's wisdom. That's God's kind of wisdom. So if you learn to do that, somebody tells you something or somebody does something hurtful to you, you instinctively respond, I don't have all the facts yet. I don't know. I'm really tempted to be really mad right now or really hurt. I don't have all the facts. So what do you do next? What do you do after that? Just let it go? Just forget about it? Not if the relationship matters, right? Not if the relationship matters. Then you got to get the facts, right? Get the first to present his case seems right till another comes forward and questions him. Find out what's on the other side. Ask those questions before making judgment. You can ask questions like they did in Joshua 22. How could you possibly do this to me? Da, 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 da. That's probably not going to be helpful. Withhold judgment. Find out what happened. Admit that maybe there's some way that you've misjudged the situation. Maybe you haven't. Maybe there is a break in the relationship and a genuine hurt that happens that needs to be worked out. That can happen too. Well, I have a tool for you. I want to give you a tool that can be really helpful if you really want to learn the truth and reconcile relationships and do this right without misjudging a situation. This tool is something that you... I would love it for it to just be part of who you are. This is something that you can use all the time down the road. It's simple. Anybody can learn to use it. It's easy. I've learned it in counseling training in the past. It is three letters. OIC. OIC. And when you practice these three letters, they represent three words. But when you practice this, you're going to get to the point where you can say, oh, I see. I understand. And the three words are observation, interpretation, clarification. Observation, interpretation, clarification. We have no observation is what happened. This is what happened that was offensive to me, that was hurtful to me. Interpretation is this is why I'm upset about it. This is what it means. This is what you meant when you did this. This is how it made me feel. That's interpretation. Clarification is backing up and saying, am I wrong? Could I be wrong somehow? Where you clarify. We don't have any trouble with observation. We see what happened. We have no trouble with interpretation. I'm mad. Where we get off is we put a different C in there. Instead of clarification, we do condemnation. Observation, interpretation, condemnation. That's what we do when we don't include the other side. They're guilty. I know enough. They're guilty. And either I'm going to stay away from them, broken relationship, whatever. Condemnation may come after clarification. They may be guilty. They may be guilty. And depending on who you are and how you tend to respond to things, if you do the wrong kind of OIC, the condemnation, you may respond in anger or you may respond in hurt. Those are different ways that we respond, but both of them tend to break their relationship. So we can back up and stick in this clarification step. That's the way we're going to be able to reconcile and figure out if we did misjudge. But there's a really important key to actually doing this well. The key is to actually believe I might be missing something. I have to actually believe I might be missing something. That's wisdom. That's wisdom. What if Israel had used that approach with their brothers, who appeared to be straying from true worship? they would have approached their brothers in a totally different way, right? It might have gone something like this. Reuben, Gad, listen, we need to talk. A few days ago, you guys built this huge altar on the edge of the Jordan River. Now, usually when somebody builds an altar, they intend to offer sacrifices on it. Now, the fact that you did this looks like you intend to worship other gods. Are we missing something here? You got the observation. Here's the fact. You built an altar. Here's the interpretation. You're probably going to worship with it. And then the clarification. What am I missing? What am I missing? Is this true? Is this really what happened? And at that point, you need to stop talking and listen. They get a chance to respond. And they would have probably had the same response. Similar, at least. Wow, I'm glad you asked me about that. That's not why we built this altar. Not at all. We thought since we're moving to the other side of the Jordan, it's going to be less convenient for us to come across and to worship the way we're supposed to at Shiloh with you. So we thought maybe if we built this replica, that could remind you guys and us that we worship the same God. We're kind of afraid, honestly, that someday you might forget and we wouldn't be welcome across anymore. So we wanted to build this so you would know we worship your God with you. It's a lot different, isn't it? From how it happened. Clarification happens, the issue is resolved. When you do the condemnation before clarification, when you decide you know, what you're doing is you're sticking them in a hole. These 2.5 tribes were stuck in a hole. You are guilty. You are guilty. And they had to climb up out of that hole to say, no, you got it wrong. Let's not stick people in a hole. Let's leave them on the level playing field and find out if they stuck themselves in a hole or not. Does that make sense? That kind of wisdom, following these Proverbs and this OIC, that can help in a lot of ways. Not just when somebody has hurt me, somebody's offended me. This can protect you from giving out damaging advice. A friend is telling you about their problems. They're telling about their dud spouse and all the stuff that they're doing. It is easy to just hear one side and to come out with some kind of advice. Oh my goodness, you need to leave that guy. He's a loser. Or whatever. You haven't heard the whole thing, right? And we naturally, when we complain, when we talk about things that are hurting us or whatever, we're painting a picture that makes us look a little bit better. Maybe on purpose, maybe not. We just need to know that's how we function. This can keep you from making some bad advice. If you heard the whole side, you would not say what you say when you only hear one side of it. Not too long ago, I heard about a solid Christian counselor who even fell into this trap. He heard one side of the story, and he made recommendations without listening to the other side, and a lot of people got hurt. A lot of people got hurt by that. It's easy to fall into that, but we know better than that, right? We know better than that because we know I don't have all the facts. I don't have all the information. I need to get the whole picture before I make a judgment. By the end of I Love Lucy, that show, if you want to watch that, it's on Hulu. You can watch it. By the end of the show, Lucy has actually convinced herself that rather than waiting for her husband to kill her, she's absolutely convinced. She's decided that it's probably better for her to strike first. And she actually attempts to kill her husband before he kills her. It's just a goofy show. It resolves itself in the end. It's funny. But it shows how easy it is to misjudge each other. So just watch out for that. Watch out for that. Remember those 3 Proverbs. It's not good to have zeal without knowledge or be hasty and miss the way. The first to present his case seems right till another comes forward and questions him. And he who answers before listening, that is his folly and his shame. God's kind of leader gets the facts before making judgments. So tuck that tool away in your belt, observation, interpretation, clarification. Find out. And then if necessary, there may be confrontation. If necessary. When you apply that kind of wisdom, that could save you more than one relationship in your life. That can do a lot of good. That can really help a lot. God, we thank you that you've given us wisdom. You have given us wisdom, and the Bible is pretty honest, and you can see ways that people mess up and ways that they do have the right priorities. God, one right priority is worship. So important that we worship the right God. You are the one true God. You're the living God who made us and then sent Jesus to redeem us, who loved us and longs to bring us near. God, help us not get that wrong. And help us to be as passionate about that as the Israelites were. And give us a zeal for you and a love for you. That we live our lives out of that. But also help us to exercise your wisdom, to not be quick to condemn, but that we would listen first. We'd have the humility to know we don't know everything. The things we are probably missing. Thank you, Lord. There's nothing that you're missing. You are complete. And we want to live our lives in a way that honors you. And this is one way to do that. In Jesus' name, amen.